I'm Sheila Cagle, and this is Communicate Influence, the podcast for people in communications, marketing, and writing. Damien Corbett, a PR practitioner in the UK, recently published a book called The Social CEO: How Social Media Can Make You a Stronger Leader. It's a collection of chapters or essays by experts in the field. One contributor is global PR executive Bob Picard, who wrote the chapter titled How PR Disasters Are Driving CEOs to Embrace Social Media. In this episode, Bob discusses his contribution to the social CEO and why CEOs must either embrace social media or lose touch with their stakeholders.
Hi, Bob. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Sheila. Nice to speak with you again.
That's my pleasure to have you here. Thanks for joining.
My pleasure.
We're going to talk today on a chapter that you contributed to a book by Damien Corbett. His book, published by Bloomsbury, is called The Social CEO, and your chapter is titled How PR Disasters Are Driving CEOs to Embrace Social Media. So, Bob, tell us how you contributed to Damien's book and the process involved there.
Damien, in 2018, had a really cool idea to come up with a book that would be the shared effort of several people, subject matter experts, when it comes to leadership consulting, public relations, nonprofit organizations, and so on. And there have been very few books out in the marketplace addressing how it is that CEOs should communicate using the most modern techniques available, or in the case of these digitally disrupted times, social media. So Damien wanted to come up with a concept which would draw the best insights from subject matter experts across a spectrum of different domains, where the collective enterprise would have a richer feel to it than just if he had done something on his own. So I put my hand up at the very beginning of this project, and I felt like kind of a cheerleader for Damien. I thought at the beginning he felt it was going to be a spectacularly unlikely thing if he could get this thing published, but I did my best to encourage him, and I think we were all favorably impressed when, in very short order, he was able to convince Bloomsbury to publish this book. And I wanted to be the fellow coming up with the PR chapter, what social media has to do with PR for chief executives. And I locked my theme in, and he was good enough to give me that territory in the book to articulate some of my views.
That's great. And as you said, impressive that he was able to get a publisher to agree quickly.
Well, he's a persuasive and likable fellow. So people who know him best, maybe aren't too surprised. But Damien can also be, he's a humble guy, self-effacing. He can be modest, and this is part of his charm. So it doesn't at all surprise me that he was able to close the sale.
That's good. Impressive. Now, your chapter, Bob, I'm curious, did you do a lot of research for it? How did you approach it? Or did you write it from experience? Tell us about that before we start asking about the actual content.
Well, my subject matter expertise, after 30 years in public relations, has in recent times been squarely focused on the area of leadership communication on social media. So this subject matter was already an area that I was very familiar with, and I felt like there's important information to share with this marketplace, with the executive marketplace, because I think in recent times we've hit a real pivot point, and we've gone from a situation, Sheila, where most chief executives were afraid of using social media for fear that they might make some kind of mistake. So many did not get on to these various social platforms, the Twitters and the Facebooks and the Instagrams. However, in recent times, especially since Trump, and particularly since COVID-19, we've reached the point where their fear of being absent from social media, especially if something goes wrong with their company, that fear of being absent is greater than the fear of being there and making a mistake, which was part of their initial reluctance. So the embrace has been fully informed by the current tides of opinion in the marketplace. And when something goes wrong with a company or a complex organization like a government or a nonprofit organization, all eyes go online looking for the leader. And that's why the leader has to be on social media, and they have to be able to orchestrate and communicate and relate to people right from the start of any incident. That's the gospel that I'm spreading right now.
That's very interesting. So there's been a very, very recent change, even since you wrote that chapter. As you said, COVID and other things have prompted CEOs and leaders to get online quickly.
Well, the book is coming out in a paperback format very soon, and it will incorporate updates as necessary or required. I'm not sure if they will relate to my own contribution, but what I can say here, Sheila, is that what Damien and I and the other co-contributors were advocating several months ago, well, going back to the genesis of the project in 2018, it's been more than demonstrated that we were on the right track through what's happened in COVID-19 with the interest among the public in strong, competent leadership that communicates effectively and addresses their emotions in a timely way in the now of a rapidly evolving, fluid public opinion environment. We were focusing on this niche long before it became mainstream, and now everyone's talking about this area. So I think this book is a valuable resource that people can use right away, as this whole topic enjoys a higher salience than it ever did before.
Well, I think that's very true. As you say, you were ahead of the topic, the subject. And for many people, it will still be the case, you know, if they read the existing version of the book before the updates, it will still be relevant to many people because, as you say in the book, people have been timid, they've been afraid, also afraid to take career risks, so they haven't jumped online and used these tools.
Many of the people who end up being the number one in a complex organization, like a business, a corporation, these people may or may not have risen through the ranks through communicative behaviors or through some of the techniques that are current now through social media. So this is, to most executives, a relatively new area of endeavor. And many executives, particularly the more experienced ones, you know, they were brought up in a world of control, a world of hierarchy, a world of deference. So it's not like we could just wave a magic wand and change the way that they've been thinking for their entire career about how it is that they should communicate with people. Having risen up the ranks and ascended the career ladder, some expect that they're going to be sitting on top of the commanding heights of information, broadcasting their views to an appreciative audience of people who will just passively consume whatever it is that they say. So all of a sudden, rewiring your mind to deal with peer-to-peer horizontal communication where people expect to be listened to and demand to have their voices heard, I mean, that's not for everybody. That's not the career experience of many executives. It's something they've got to wrap their heads around and deal with, because we've done some research here in Canada, and I've seen indications around the world. The public now expects the chief executive of organizations to communicate about the activities of the company which they lead, especially if something goes wrong, such as a crisis. So it's not really optional anymore. This is going to become mandatory for executives to signal their leadership online through social media.
And as you say, it might not necessarily be something to do with age. One thing that you point out in your chapter is, experience. But, you know, we tend to think that older people are a little bit out of touch with social media and that kind of thing. But I would imagine that there are even some younger leaders, because they're in this like really elite group, aren't they? You talk about the one percenters, and they might not move in circles where, you know, pulling out your phone and tweeting something or taking a picture, they're not used to that. So maybe that's part of it as well.
Well, demographically, there's no doubt that a CEO who is in her or his 50s, this person is less likely to be actively communicating on social media compared to a chief executive who may be in their 30s. There is no doubt about that. However, that's not to say that there aren't many great examples of 50-something CEOs, even older, who are out there as effective communicators online. So just because the numbers are a bit different or the tendencies or the likelihoods are slightly different, depending which generation we're talking about, that has not held back the more seasoned constituency of older executives from looking at this. And I think what happened with Trump in 2016 really was a digital disruption that broke through their earlier resistance. I think a lot of executives looked at how Trump was elected president of the United States, basically by running and emoting his campaign through a Twitter feed. And they, while they didn't want, in most cases, to be like Trump, in fact, I think the majority would be horrified to be like that. They did, watching the case study of his undeniable and unexpected success, feel the power of social media for the very first time in terms of driving real outcomes. I think a lot of chief executives, Sheila, regarded social media as a waste of time before that, or they assumed it was like some frivolous or time-wasting thing, you know, where they would tweet about what they had for breakfast that morning. I don't know how many times I heard that kind of a comment. But the power of social through the Trump case study really galvanized people to go out there and give it a try. And I don't know how many conversations were started 2016, 2017 by executives fearing that they were being left behind and weren't using the most powerful communications tool in the corporate public relations arsenal.
Now, there's one theme that I picked up in your chapter, and it's really the shift that digital has brought about to the way in which CEOs should be communicating, and that is picking up and being more sensitive to sentiments that are happening in the present moment, as opposed to the old-time, very logical, very planned PR with the speeches or comments going through a number of approval processes. That in itself is a huge change. And talking about fear and timidity, that fact in itself is going to make people nervous about using social media. I mean, I've seen managers in my career who've been quite nervous, and they haven't been in the, you know, the C-suite or even a CEO. So let's talk about that a little bit, about the words that you use to describe what's happening, the sensing sentiments in the present moment.
Look, what we're describing right now is actually very difficult for a lot of executives to do, Sheila. Knowing how much to communicate, whether or not to address a certain issue, what chord to strike, how something should be scheduled for the purposes of social media sharing. Most executives don't know how to do that instinctively on their own. It's not like they wake up in the morning and roll out of bed and they can just effortlessly do this on their own, and nor should they. Any executive communication should be carefully calibrated in concert with an overall corporate communication plan. But their imperative is to not only just deal with digital disruption in terms of the technology of using a social network, but you know, there's also been economic disruption. There's also been emotional disruption. There are a lot of people with anger and fear, people with hopes for the future, people who are envious, jealous, online, spiteful individuals. Knowing how to articulate your feeling on a certain issue, perhaps it's something in the news on a given day, you know, it's awfully risky for executives because they're concerned about annoying people who might not like what they're saying. And there's just an other focus here that is unnatural to a lot of CEOs, which is part of the training that we do at Signal, for example, because if you do a content analysis of the CEO tweets, for example, most talk about me and I. However, as you know well, because this is your style, I believe, as well, most of these executives would do far better if they were to talk about we or us and align what they're doing or talking about with the sensibilities of their target audience in the broader public constituency online through social media. That is not easy. That is hard. And so it takes experience and it takes a team. It takes an entourage sometimes where you've got internal corporate comms people, you've got maybe an agency advisor or a coach. Of course, this all has to be done in concert with a system or a process that has to be hammered out, concomitant with a leadership communication plan or a bespoke design for each executive. They're all different, right? There's no cookie cutter way of doing this. So anyway, this is a wordy and long-winded way of telling you that there's no one size here that fits all, and it's awfully tough to do, which is why professional services, such as the ones that we offer, are, I think, in record demand now, and why books like this one, The Social CEO, are flying off the shelves.
Well, it's an important answer, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, I'm sure in some instances, CEOs of a couple of handful, maybe, have thought, gosh, you know, I'm really behind on this. I better jump onto Twitter. And they really don't know what they're doing. And they could get themselves into a heck of a lot of trouble. I'm sure that you've seen cases like that, or you've responded to people who've done that. Yeah. But what, I mean, have you had to dig anyone out of a really difficult hole? How badly?
Yes, I specialize.
Any stories to share with us?
Well, there's one CEO. He was a client of mine, and I took him through the planning process. We did a custom design for his social media activity. We decided which platforms we would be on, and we discussed the rules of the road. And for an interim breaking in period, we discussed how it would be that approval should be developed for some of the different social shares. Well, anyway, one day, the CEO, who was in Australia at the time, he decided to start tweeting overnight about some analyst who had rated his stock, his company's stock, negatively. And he was insulting this was an ad hominem critique of the analyst, and it was so badly received online through Twitter that the stock of the company went down by more than 25%. So I woke up in the morning and I saw all these tweets that the CEO had done, but I took him through what we could have done differently. But there's no putting the ketchup back in the bottle or the toothpaste back in the tube. Once you do that sort of thing, these are revealing moments. If somebody's angry or really annoyed that something didn't go the way that they were hoping, and then they launch this searing personal attack, almost in a bullying type way, against somebody. I mean, that reveals the temperament of the person, and this leads me to an extremely important point here, Sheila. Everyone's talking about authenticity these days. Let's make sure that these executives communicate the way that they really are. But you know what? Some of them didn't get the top job because they were so nice or cuddly or wonderful people. Some of them got the top job because they were political, calculating, with sharp elbows, or in some cases, backstabbing. Whether or not authenticity is the friend of some of these CEOs, I don't know. I think, if anything, what I'm describing maybe will help support the idea that we should be looking for a different model of ideal leadership, so that people who can communicate authentically the way that they really are the ones in the top jobs and not some of these other kinds of people.
That's a little bit like that comment, that people always say when you're, for example, maybe young people are going for a job interview, it's just be yourself. I personally think that's one of the worst things that you can say to someone, because if you're generally irritable or you've got this, slight layer of anger under your skin 24 hours a day, just being yourself isn't going to work. The advice should be you really need to change. And I'm sure that's something that you've had to say to clients.
My advice to clients is to be yourself at your best to get what you want through real-time leadership on social media. Now, there should be a strategy here. there should be a framing exercise where we look at the executive and decide what it is about that person we can authentically and transparently communicate into the public domain in a way that makes sense for him or her and supports the company's achievement of very specific communications and business objectives. There should be no communication by a CEO, in my opinion, that is just, you know, off the cuff or on the spur of the moment. This kind of communication has such power. My friend Nick Nanos, the pollster in Canada, he did a public opinion poll, and he found out that social media is the number one most dangerous form of media among all other channels when it comes to posing a threat to destroying somebody's image, whether it's a person or an organization. So, yeah, social media, a CEO using social media to build an image, that's just great. But let's not forget that if it's not used properly, the same CEO can stumble and fumble on social media in a way that completely and utterly destroys their reputation. So the stakes are high. That's why what we're talking about here should command a premium place in the PR services marketplace.
Now, you've obviously been called into organization. You work as a consultant, but can you give a little bit of advice to PRs, PR teams, or even marketers who are working in-house and they want to get their CEO, persuade them to be on online, and they don't have the budget for someone like you? Is there anything that they can do to slowly get this person up to speed, or, as you say, be yourself at your best?
I think in most cases, people decide that they do have the budget if, all best efforts notwithstanding, the chief executive is still reluctant to embrace social media. Most companies that can afford a corporate comms department could surely afford an external consultant, at least in an interim way, to plan and to develop a program of action, which they then carry forward themselves later on. So I think that my advice to your question for in-house corporate communicators is this. Make sure you communicate with your chief executive in a way where their potential ignorance about the importance of this is not exposed to a large group of people. I don't know how many times the leadership communication program that I've been proposing or an in-house team has been proposing has been stymied because the format of the meeting where the chief executive attends to make the decision is one where that person may be put on the spot to look informed or on top of an area seen to be so important that they don't want to be embarrassed in front of their subordinates with the perception that they're ignorant about something that's so au courant, something that's so fundamentally important. So often, someone like me, a third-party consultant, can come in to a private or a core group meeting, a small number of individuals where you could really read the riot act to the chief executive. You could read the riot act to a chief executive and tell that person that if they don't embrace social media and signal their real-time leadership online, they will be at risk of needlessly squandering what could be a tremendous opportunity to build a very high-value reputation capital for their company. You put it in stark terms. The use of marketing verbiage or jargon or PR niceties, forget it. Tough talk based on fear of what could go wrong and hope for what could go well. That's the way to do it in private.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the things that some in-house PRs find difficult, that the CEO can be intimidating. I mean, in the worst case, they could even be a bit of a bully.
Sure.
And they're not interested in listening to their own in-house PR folks who are probably highly qualified with lots of experience and making a change.
Mm-hmm, quite.
So, yeah, which is, it's very unfortunate. And you're right, in some cases, it's better when someone like you comes in and just delivers a message straight and kind of gets things on track.
Well, what I'm describing too, what we are talking about on your podcast today, Sheila, this is an area that has become extremely important all of a sudden. Arguably, leadership comes by the CEO, the most important element of corporate communication today, especially as we've seen during COVID-19. Yet at the same time, it's one area that in-house departments and many leading PR agencies have not championed, and they have not achieved a mastery of it at the high cutting edge level where they should be. And so something else that's happening or stymieing the effectiveness of this is, I can go into meetings sometimes with the corporate comms people and the CEO, and I could put forth a plan of action and explain why it is that the company and the CEO should be communicating on social media. But then, of course, the outcome, it could be engagement. I might be hired to do this. Or my firm might be hired. Or they might just decide to take the ideas and implement them on their own. And there's a real risk of the latter happening because there is a fear among corporate comms directors. If you bring in a consultant and the consultant talks about, if the consultant, first of all, has a rapport with your boss, which you may lack, and if the consultant comes in totally state-of-the-art on this really important area where they may not be state-of-the-art, then their fear is that you would be able to be an independent source of information, and you have a relationship with their boss who might be wondering, they fear, why the heck is it that we haven't been doing this stuff all along if it's so important? Why have my own people not done this? So that's a resistance factor in the marketplace that I notice at the moment as well.
Mm. Yeah, I've seen that in the past as well. People will feel insecure. Say that the consultant doesn't really know what they're talking about, or they're concerned about job loss, which maybe a lot of people are in this environment. So there are a whole host of reasons why that might not go as smoothly as it really could.
Well, that story that's an old story of the agency business. There's no doubt that that kind of thing has always been an obstacle. But I think it's even more pronounced because this area has suddenly gone from fringe or peripheral to occupying center stage.
Yeah. And one thing that shocked me in your book, in your chapter, I should say, was that reading that some PRs have actually given outdated counsel to clients. Yeah, like the counsel that you would give to people in the media environment of 10 years ago, which is, not immediate. It's not going to help anyone. I found it really hard to believe that something like that would happen.
I think there's a lot of very out-of-date PR consulting going on. I won't go so far as to label it malpractice, but it certainly. But I think if you look at PR firms at their state of the art best, providing the up to date counsel in this area, I think some of them just aren't able to do it. And I think there are still PR firms that are handing out advice about issuing holding statements. Or doing things, kind of 1999 vintage in terms of how it is that they should deal with the situation. The whole concept of a leader of a company on social media, suddenly, if a incident or issue occurs, striking the chord that they should in the now of public opinion, that still doesn't happen in many cases. And in many cases, we get the carefully parsed statements that have weasel words or corporate speak coming out, or stuff like, we take these matters very seriously, canned corporate cliches. I do a Google alert every day, and I get a summary of all the different companies saying, we take these matters very seriously, and around the world, governments, private enterprise, in the UK, in the US, you name it, this is a phrase that's used around the world all the time. And I think that's not good PR advice that an agency should tell a company. That's a phrase that they should use. I think people can see through that kind of hollow plastic save as communications contrivance. So that's my indicator that there's something to my critique here. I'm not just guessing. I can see all the time or obvious media training dodges where a chief executive on television says something like, well, you're asking me to speculate. What I can tell you is, as people are sort of wondering why it is the CEO didn't answer the question. I think that's also yesterday's media training, not today's.
Well, you know, that phrase, we take these matters very seriously. What's missing there is, what are you going to do about it? You know, we've had a lot of that in the last few weeks with, the situation in the States and the really tragic death of George Floyd, and with brands trying to respond appropriately and talking about, you know, equality and diversity. But what will they do? What will you do if you're an agency about these things?
Well, plus what you've also mentioned another one. I mean, something bad happens in society or something sensational occurs. The Floyd death, for example, or the passenger on United Airlines who was bloodied and dragged down the aisle, or, well, you name it. I mean, there are so many different problematic things that occur where there's a vivid video and the public outrage that results, the amplitude of that emotion. It's like regular thinking on steroids. So there could be times where a company feels tremendous pressure, even from a single video clip. Well, you've mentioned Floyd. You know, one person in one jurisdiction, in one city, in one U.S. state. But because people have had a wider experience of this sort of thing around the world, it strikes a chord, right? But it may or may not be relevant to a company's business to talk about this. They may or may not, in that heated moment, want to say something that maybe, well, where if they make a commitment, doesn't come to pass in the future. So knowing how and what to say, what not to say in these high emotion moments, these milestone public moments, that's another thing. Some companies may come out and say too much. Some may say too little. Some may say entirely the wrong thing and look awkward. Everyone is finding their way here. There's no accepted. Perfect or 100% verified, this is going to work way of doing it. I think everyone's learning together right now how to communicate in this new kind of constantly emotionally charged communications context.
So kind of going from what you said there then, does the decision that a CEO, they have to make in terms of responding to something, it really requires some analysis then. It's not something that can kind of happen naturally. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Like, say I'm your client, Bob. I've got my business. You're working with me. I feel very emotional and, you know, affected by what's happened in the States, and that's true. Yeah. And so I call you and I say, you know, I want to write something about this or say something. What kind of advice or guidance would you give me based on, say, I've got a PR agency?
Well, it's a standard checklist that it doesn't need to be a long or time-consuming one. It should be, am I the right one to say this? What is the right way to say this? If so, when should I say it? What is it that I should say, and through what method? So I think there's a triage. There's a list of questions that you simply ask yourself. You know, does this need to be said right now by me? That takes a few seconds to figure out. And if the answer is no, so be it. But we also see some very interesting examples. Look at the Michael McCain tweets on Trump, the CEO of Maple Leaf Foods in Canada. He, on the company's Twitter account, unleashed on Trump and basically blamed him for what had happened with the shooting down of that Iranian jet aircraft, which included the death of one of his own employees. PR conventional wisdom says, whatever you do, make sure you don't use the company account. You know, use your personal account. Well, he just went ahead and used the company account. And he spoke in emotional terms. I could tell that, and people could tell more broadly, this fellow was grieving. He was angry. He was upset, but he was grieving the loss of somebody he probably knew. And I think even though he attacked a sitting president, and maybe not all of his stockholders were thrilled with that, I think he got a pass because people can see that the emotion was raw, the sentiment was authentic and sincere. And so what if he used the company account? It's nice to see CEOs for a change communicating like real people, humans with feelings, not like machines or robots or key message contraptions.
But again, as you kind of pointed out there, if you're grieving, which is grief affects you in ways you might not even recognize when you're in the midst of it, you might think that you're thinking clearly and you're not. You have to be very careful and think about what you're doing. Yeah,
I'm pro thinking. I mean, the idea right now is that you should be a continuous communicator and you should strike the right chord. But that doesn't mean that you have to say everything that comes into your mind about everything that's going on right now in the public square online. You could pick and choose your battles. And you should also, I think, you should have a strategy in place that you follow. For example, if you're a CEO, you and your comms team could come up with these are the three things that our CEO comments on. And these are, by contrast, the things about that person's private life or, non-core issues that we really won't have anything to say about. And I noticed the same thing when I look at your Twitter, Sheila, and you look at my social media sharing. I mean, I share content that interests me about public relations to a community of people who are largely fellow communications professionals.
Mm.
That's what makes sense for me as a longtime executive in my industry. So I think everyone should sort of think in advance. Every chief executive should think, what does it make sense for me to be sharing? It has to make sense for them as a person, make sense for them in terms of the sector of the business, the kind of business that they're in, and so on. There should be a plan. There should be thought. Authenticity has been overvalued. And I think, there should be some degree of discipline, of planning, of thoughtfulness ahead of time. This is, I think, where we should be headed now.
I agree. On Twitter, I do that. And in fact, I'm paring down my followers that are people I'm following so that they're really within the industry. You know, it's probably for me, it's 90% content of what I'm interested in or what I think will help people who are following me. And then maybe 10% of things that I might have done or liked on the weekend, such as a film or a book. So, yeah. Well, that's been great, Bob. It's really useful. And I think especially for younger listeners, well, I'm sure for everyone, but for younger listeners who might want to get into this field and work with CEOs or master social media in times of crisis, it's been great and fantastic talking to you.
Well, many thanks for your interest, Sheila. It's clear that being a CEO today isn't as easy as it used to be when it comes to communications, and everything they say or do is within the capture radius of a smartphone. So this really does affect the role of the corporate communicator. This increases our importance, and I can't think of a day in my long PR career, Sheila, where what we do for a living hasn't been more important than it is today. So hopefully we will be able to persuade the C-suite and be able to command the resources to do this stuff so that we can take our own industry to the next level.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, thanks, Bob. And also, I know you're super busy, so thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
Much obliged indeed, Sheila. Take care now.
You too.